Hello and welcome to another Physical Activity and Wellbeing in Education podcast episode with me, Kate Stevenson, Education Advisor and Physical Education Specialist in County Durham. We continue our PE School Sport Physical Activity and Wellbeing dialogue today with another one of our delightful guests. Today, I'm joined by my lovely colleagues from some of our secondary schools. These schools are engaged in our Sport England funded teacher training and project development programme. The overall aim of the secondary teacher training programme is to increase the number of young people aged 11 to 18 who have a positive experience and perception of sport and physical activity. It's based on insight which suggests that young people's attitudes to sport and physical activity are shaped heavily by their experience at school, and that having a negative and poor experience of PE can put them off being active for life. And we know young people's attitudes towards physical activity become more negative as they get older. And the intention of this funding is built around short-term, medium and long-term impact goals. It's hoped that funding is used wisely to provide positive outcomes for some or all of our young people in school. Funding that supports professional development of teaching staff, for instance, funding that supports schools to develop their breadth and balance of their curriculum, funding to develop and improve curriculum content and delivery to inclusively engage, support and challenge students. The funding might positively target particular students, a particular focus group of students that are selected because the current PE school sport and physical activity provision has been largely ineffective or just insufficient or doesn't work for that particular group and their engagement is poor. So it's all about creating a positive experience and raising engagement. Ultimately, we're aiming to engage lifelong learning, lifelong movers, lifelong self-selective participators throughout life, as I've said. So we've been thinking a lot about inclusive physical education in particular. And lots about the Sport England funding is about us being the advocates about the importance of developing inclusive PE, school sport, physical activity offer, and the opportunities of providing those positive experiences. I've got a guest with me today, Kira, and she's going to give us that student perspective, if you like, around all of this. And my colleagues hopefully will chip in at times too. There's about 1.3 million pupils in England with special educational needs and disabilities, 93%, as I've said with colleagues previously, are within our state-funded mainstream schools. And in the call today, we've got staff from our Durham schools, from mainstream, as well as special schools too. And they work on the Sport England programme with us and doing amazing things to try and support that inclusive offer and engagement, some of which we may share with you in a moment too. So we're kind of thinking about what we need to learn from and do better at. And a lot of that is about engaging the student voice and finding out from the ground what works, what doesn't, and reflecting on our practice in school. And something we're very passionate about is about doing what we can to ensure that as educationalists, we do what's best for the students, for our particular students, our particular cohorts, and individualising that approach sometimes for those. Okay, so I have a wonderful guest with me today. I'm going to introduce her better. Let me see. We're going to basically delve a little bit deeper, utilising Kira's voice. and she's going to talk to us about her experience of PE and school sport whilst at school, being a child with special education needs, and perhaps give us insight into some of those barriers that you face, Kira, to having a positive and engaging experience. We'll have the opportunity to reflect on our own practice as educationalists and practitioners, and think about our current curriculum models and school sport provision, and pose some questions to you perhaps, if that's okay, to deepen our understanding by listening directly to a student's perspective. We'll also hear, of course, of Kira's many successes, which we'll be delighted to hear about, and I know you're anxious to share those with us, involved in the field of physical activity and international sport, and your current, I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but what's currently just happened to you, your current award, that you'll be extremely proud of. So welcome, Kira. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll hand the visible mic, if you like, over to you and hear and let us hear a little bit more about yourself and what you'd like to share with us today.
Yeah, thank you. So I just wanted to share a bit about myself, but also my slides as well. So KB, that's my nickname that my friends and family call me. So I'm here to share with you my journey through sport and also a person with a learning disability. School doesn't really fill me up with great experiences in sports, as I didn't get the opportunity to represent my school at any sporting competitions. In my school, pupils were put into sets depending on their academic ability, not their sporting ability. And because I'm not very academic, I ended up being in the lowest sets. And as with people that were not really enthusiastic, didn't really want to be there. And it was hard for me because I was passionate about sport and I wanted to do it. I'm also a proud special needs athlete and leader. I thought it'd be a good idea to explain the differences between the Olympic families. You have the Olympics, which is for non-disabled athletes. They have Olympic Games every 4 years. You have the Paralympics, which are for predominantly with athletes with a physical or visual impairments, and they have an Olympic Games every 4 years. And then you have the Special Olympics, which is for people with learning disabilities. They have a World Games every 4 years. They also offer all year round sporting opportunities and training through local and regional clubs. My sporting journey started once I left school. It's been an honour competing as a Special Olympics athlete in regional, national and world cycling competition. These are all the medals that I have so far and some to join as well. In that photo, including the ones around the edges, there are 77 medals in there. My first sporting competition, I got to go to Los Angeles in 2015, representing Great Britain. It was an amazing opportunity to be a part of opening ceremonies, competing for my country and coming home with 3 gold medals. It was in the 10K time trial, a 15K road race and a 10K road race. But later on, the next 4 year cycle, I got the opportunity to defend my titles and go to Abu Dhabi, where it was quite an experience. I got to race at the Formula One racing track. It was a different experience from Los Angeles because people knew who I was. In LA, they didn't. I felt under pressure to defend my titles, but you know what? I did it. Now I'm a double, triple gold medalist. I've used this experience to showcase the power of sports by delivering international talks and in schools, colleges, here today, radio and TV. I've also become a cycling coach, a level 2 swimming teacher as well. I'm also a level 1, 2 and 3 bikeability instructor, which I love doing, but it does not end there. I'm the Great Britain Vice Chair of the Athlete Leadership Team. I'm also the Special Olympics European Eurasia Chairperson of the Athlete Leadership Council, a Special Olympics Global Athlete Leadership Council as the Vice Chair and Health Representative, a Special Olympics International Athlete Consultant, a Global Health Messenger, through to being a Lion. To me, inclusion looks like a place where everybody is celebrated and accepted, no matter what, even if they have a disability. Alongside Dr. Neve Morton, who's a sports psychologist, we work together weekly on projects showcasing the ability of people with learning disabilities, from filming, doing weekly sessions on mental health and overall well-being. And this is the way how we interact with the athletes weekly. We have this slide up and we say, how are you feeling today? And they'll point to an emoji and then they'll explain why they're feeling that way as well. Just to try and explain to them that it's okay not to feel okay. And if you have many emotions as well, not just one, that's fine as well. Never underestimate what people like me can do. What I didn't mention to you as well is, whilst I was training to go to these competitions, I was also studying as well. I went to Bolton College and now have a BTEC level 3 diploma in sports coaching, a level 2 in social enterprise and entrepreneurship, a BTEC level 3 in marketing. But the most Another thing as well as I wanted out of my college course in the marketing is to set up my own business. And I have been doing that. It's called Route to Change, as you can see, but it has all different sections as well. Some of my aspirations that I want to do is keep inspiring others and be a positive role model for the next generation. My question for you is, what is your aspiration in life? But finally, in 2021, I was put on the Queen's Birthday's Honours list for my services to sport, and I got given a British Empire Medal as well. But I'm going to end the slide and stop presenting, as I have something very, very special to show you. It says British Empire Medal. And wow, this one is quite special because on the other medals, this is the only one that you can't see, but underneath you get your name engraved. The other ones do not. So it has a ribbon. And then on the other side, it says ER. So it's very, very special.
That's amazing. So for our listeners at home, Kira's showing us her medal on screen and it's absolutely beautiful. What an amazing accomplishment.
Yes, 23. I managed to do that. But for me, it was quite a special one, really. But the person who nominated me, she was the ex-mayoress of Bolton. And she unfortunately passed away in a hit and run. And, you know, I spoke to her about it a long time ago because at that point it wasn't very well known that people with a disability would get honours and things like that. And she said, oh, you never know. Keep going. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Because I love my coaching and I love doing the talks and speaking to other people. And then this honours came out, and unfortunately she's not with us, but the day was so nice. The sun came out, it wasn't raining as traditional up north, it usually is raining and miserable, but it wasn't. And it was nice that we had the Lord Lieutenant who presented me the medal. We also had the High Sheriff as well, and the Left Lieutenant, and the compere, I would say. He did a 20 to 30 seconds introduction to each person of why they were given the honours and the medal, which I thought was really nice. And then everybody could understand the reasoning behind it. So it was a fantastic day. This medal has done a few trips already to different schools, but I just wanted to show you and your staff and all different schools the medal as well, so you can kind of see what hard work and dedication can be. So for somebody who doesn't have very many qualifications, you know, coming from school, because my reading and writing wasn't the best, but yeah, with that, life lessons you learn from the age that you're in school, you can do so much with it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, if you have any questions, please ask. It's not a problem.
Thank you so much for all of that. I can see my colleagues are just in awe of everything that you've talked to us about. Colleagues, do you have any questions you'd like to put to Kira on anything that you've heard, or ask her about her award, her medal, which is amazing?
Thank you.
My colleagues are going shy.
Hi, Kira.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
So, Becky, would you like to go ahead, and then Stephen, I'll bring you in. So, Becky first.
Yeah. So, Kira, if you put yourself in our shoes, because we all teach PE to with varying different levels of students with SEND. So, I have in my class, I'll have a typical mainstream class with maybe one or two students with SEND, but then also we have a class which is all SEND. So if you were the PE teacher, what would you have done differently to your PE teachers that meant that? Because if you didn't represent your school at all, that is just horrific. And so all of your achievements are after you left school. I mean, that's how, what would you have done differently if you were the teacher in their shoes?
I wouldn't put people in steps, depending on academic abilities, but I would also give the students different experiences of sports. So for me, my hand and eye coordination isn't the best. So I would try different sports and experiences of that, because predominantly the sports that were given us to do were hand and eye. So we could try different things. You've got your wheelchair, a basketball, you've got tennis, you've got all different things you could do. You've got, you know, BMXing, the cycling, you know, horses involved. There's so many different ways you could do that. So I just say vary the experience that we'd give to your students.
Lovely. I'm going to bring Stephen in, actually. I think he had a similar question, but Stephen's project that he's doing with his school is also using bikes and done in a different way, thinking about mechanics and what have you. Stephen, would you like to explain what you're doing with your targeted students with the Sport England funding?
I will do, yeah. Kira, thank you for your story, and best of luck with whatever happens next with it as well. Yeah, so it's your journey that's only just starting as well, so congratulations. In terms of our cycling and the projects that we do, and it's very much about looking at different aspects, not necessarily the physical aspects of the riding the bikes, but the students that we've got involved are the students that we're trying to get to actually be mechanics, and the class is sort of mini mechanics within school. So we do have mountain bikes, we do use them in lessons, but one of the big frustrations as a member of staff is us trying to maintain 15 mountain bikes and making sure then when we arrive to the lesson, 15 mountain bikes are up and running. So what I've done is sort of invested some of the money in sort of tools, etc., and sort of various bits of sort of general equipment that we know we're going to be able to need on a weekly basis. And I've got a group of year seven students who come along, and they're very much part of this mini mechanics club, and they will help me maintain these bikes on a weekly basis, with a view that the students that will then benefit long term won't just be these mechanics who have these sort of additional skills, but the pupils that we do get to use them on a regular basis in lessons. And I guess listen to your experience, then maybe that's something that I might have even underestimated as the impact that actually could have for somebody who has that experience and somebody who gets that experience on a bike that maybe I didn't maybe as value as maybe as much as I should have done. But I think that certainly hearing your story and maybe tying it in, I'm pretty pleased at the direction we're going in with this project. And I said to my colleagues a little bit earlier on, the kind of the bit that sort of snowballed this whole effect was it was some of the students who came to me and said they knew we had bikes, but they knew we didn't necessarily use them all the time. And when I explained to them why they weren't being used, well, they said, well, why can't we help? Why can't we be the ones who come out and fix them for you? If we fix them, can we then ride them? So that was kind of how it happened, and that's where we are. So, yeah.
It's great. It's definitely great. And when you mentioned it just now and a little bit before, the video is catching up. So, yeah, when you've just mentioned it now, that is great that the children and the students are actually thinking of where's the gap. How can we use the school equipment? And it's not just about the physical side, as you said. It's also the socializing. So one of the things that I picked up when I was doing, I do the balance bikes, is children are learning different skills, maths, English, turn-taking, friendships. There's one school I went to, the children outside the lesson, as you will, wouldn't talk to each other. But when I came in, they then started to mix the friendship groups at break times and lunch times. And that's also an important bit, is making friendships. And if that's something that some students find really hard, that's great, because now you've created something where they could come if they feel a bit unsure about something, they could just talk about it with the other students there as well. So that's great that you've got that, and the experiences of doing, you know, the mountain bikes or different things is great, and they learn different things from that as well.
Wonderful. And we know, thinking about what you've just said there about friendship groups and what having that inclusive, comfortable, engaging environment is so important, isn't it, for youngsters to feel accepted amongst their peers, to recognise the difficulties others have, or the talent that others have too, because we need that kind of social engagement aspect. We all need to develop empathy for others. We all need to develop roles of responsibility and leadership, which you are a prime example of those qualities that have been developed over time for you. Becky, I know that your project, just to bring you in again, actually looks at kind of social engagement a little bit in terms of teamwork and problem solving, and another area of activity that is perhaps outside of the historically normal games PE type lesson.
Yeah, so we have used our funding to train staff up to deliver Forest School. So we had the training in October, and actually our nurture group of students have been the first to access it. So at the moment I teach Forest School on the timetable to a mixture of year 7 and 8 students. Many of them have got ASD or ADHD or learning difficulties. So yeah, it's great that we see a totally different side to them when we're out in the forest. We're really lucky because we've got a small forest in school, so we can use our school facilities. But yeah, we've done den building, we've done make and bug hotels, that kind of thing. So yeah, a little bit different, I think, to the normal PE lesson, but they've really, really taken to it. And I think you can really see the social skills that brings out of students as well when they've got to work out how to put a den up. Unfortunately, when we did den building, it was gale force winds pretty much. But they managed. But yeah, the things like resilience and things like that it brought out of them was really, really good.
That is good, because we actually, there's a nursery which is close to my house I do go to, and they do Forest School. And I think it's really important, like you just said then, you know, teamwork and problem solving and perseverance as well, of when things get hard but keep going through. And inclusion starts at an early age. You can't change it when, you know, in adulthood and things like that, and teenagers can be a little bit tricky. But if you can start that through your Forest Schools and your sporting, then at least it tries to change the mindset a little bit of the students, which will kind of help that inclusion keep going forwards. And it is great having Forest Schools, like you said, because we learn different skills. Your animals are very helping. Like if somebody feels a bit stressed, anxious, just being near animals, or you know, if they have a service dog with them, it kind of helps sometimes.
Wonderful. You talked about perseverance and things there, Kira, those qualities that we need for modern day life. What would you say to any young listeners who are struggling academically, socially or emotionally, perhaps in school, and perhaps feeling frustrated with their current opportunities available to them in PE or school sport or broader school access? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say that if you have a dream, don't give up on it, because it's taken me a long time to get to this point. But as long as you keep trying and trying at it, then you will achieve it one day. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know. It isn't easy being in a hard space in your life. It's not. But it does get better nearer the end as well. And if you have any ideas that you think would be good for your school to have a go at in PE lessons, then you should tell your teachers about it, because people might think of something and go, oh, we haven't tried that, well, let's have a go with it, and trying to get their views on it as well. And if you see somebody struggling as well, why don't you give them a hand? Be that first person in the playground or this school and say, you know what, my name is, do you want to be my friend? Because that would be great, that being that first person. It takes a lot of guts to do that, to step up and make a first impression on people. Even if you think you might get judged on it, you should still try and do that. And you've got to stand up for what you believe in as well, even if people might not agree with you, because not everybody will like the same things as you, because that's just the way things work. But as long as you stand up for it, and if you see somebody struggling or you see something which isn't going quite right, then say something about it.
That's good, a good thing to know when we're thinking about kindness, really, as a virtue, isn't it? And being aware of others. You talked a little bit there about student voice, really, as well, being vocal, to enable staff to know what the difficulties are, or to have a voice to be heard that will support some sort of change within a school setting. How would you say the best? We've done surveys as part of the Sport England programme. You know, it's statutory that we do that to get our funding to begin with, and at the end of the programme to look at the differences between engagement or enjoyment of our students. But I've asked staff to kind of delve deeper than that, to bespoke it to their school setting, to actually gain further information, delve a little bit deeper so that it's more meaningful. Do you have any top tips, Kira, for getting students to really have a voice and for it to feel as if their voice is heard, rather than just an exercise of a survey that they don't necessarily see any change happening as an outcome?
I would say have a panel. You know, you have different ones for different things, so why not have one for feedback and think of ideas of different things you could do at PE lessons and sporting activities and things like that, and trying to get the ideas from the students. And that could be one person from one year group, and then they could come together and then have conversations. It could be, instead of getting written surveys, it could be auditory. It could be done in diagrams, so mind maps. If you're saying yes, why yes? If no, then why not at all? What else can you do instead of that, of an idea? And then just taking it classroom by classroom, you know, and say that, look, we want to give you an opportunity to think really creatively and set them a challenge of, as a class or as a year group, let's see make it into, could make it to a bit of a competition of who can think of an idea of activity, what they'd like to do in their PE. And then that could be done as a whole, not just separately in the year groups or classrooms. So that could be a good idea to think about.
Yeah. Brings a lot of collaboration and co-creation opportunities there, doesn't it? And the real ownership of whatever they're doing as that class or year group. Wonderful. Are there any other questions from my colleagues that you want to chip in with? Oh, Becca's coming in there. Becca, would you like to ask Kira a question?
Yeah. Hi, Kira. Thank you for sharing and congratulations on your award. Just wondering, really, if you're saying that your journey in sport happened after school, when you left school, how did you get into your sport that you've chosen, and how did you get into the training and kind of competition side of it?
That's a very good question. So it did start after school. I was at a swimming competition and I met a Special Olympics swimming club. I also met somebody from the Special Olympics, and I said I like to cycle as well. Then I went to a local competition in Manchester, an outdoor enclosed circuit, so there's no traffic you need to worry about. Went to there, competed, and then by the end of the weekend, they had, we called them commissaires, they're like judges. The head one was being the head coach at the LA World Games and said, I'd like to offer you a place to go to Los Angeles next year and represent Great Britain. Do you want it? I said, yes, of course. So we did lots of fundraising. I found myself a coach who created a training plan. And then each competition, we speak about, okay, what do we need to do? And reviewing for that. So it was through of a chance, but also finding other people to kind of help make things happen as well. So it's twofold, really.
Wonderful. Did you have any role models around kind of competition or cycling that spurred you on?
That's a good question. I didn't really know anybody who had a learning disability in cycling, but there's lots of other people who can. You know, it's Sarah Story, she's got her lead of, you know, because she's doing swimming as well, not just cycling. But then you've got Jessica Jane Applegate as well in swimming. But in cycling terms, no, because the national governing body of cycling don't recognise learning disability. So that's a bit of a harder area, as you will. But we do have a disability hub that I managed to change the name from Power to the Disability Hub, as some people would find the previous name a bit off-putting. Mm-hmm. I feel, well, because I don't have this style of disability or category, how that's not really going to work, and they could feel a bit unsure. But I did manage to change the name of the hub, so that's one good step in the right direction. Usually it's swimming, athletics, table tennis. I think that's where learning disability is recognised in the Paralympics. But in cycling, no.
Wonderful. And I guess, you know, there'll be colleagues here who are looking now and wondering if they can book you in, Kira, to be the role models for the students in their school. And it's been so valuable to actually talk to you today. I mean, I was just thinking there really around perhaps us self-evaluating our own provision, because sometimes there is a disparity, isn't there, around what perhaps staff and in the PE department, no disrespect, colleagues, but the PE department tend to be the sporty children previously. And there can be sometimes a disparity between the perception of whether their students are engaged or enjoying whatever is happening, because sometimes our engagement isn't fully observed in the same way. So we might look hot and sweaty and moving, but actually we haven't really engaged in it in a way similar way to our peers, or actually our experience has been quite negative behind the scenes. So how would you address, making sure, for instance, we've said the surveys aren't always appropriate. Sometimes, you know, in that written format doesn't give us a correct picture because someone else is filling it in on behalf of the child, or whatever. So we've got to think about how we present those surveys. But how else in that classroom PE delivery opportunity can we really delve a little bit deeper to get that student voice and ask those key questions to see if actually this experience is appropriate for you? What can we do different? You know, how do we approach someone appropriately, Kira?
No, it's a good question. It's not just looking at the sport in a physical sense, mm-hmm. as you just mentioned, but it's also looking at the mental well-being and emotional well-being of the students, of the people, because as you said, you know, they might get physically warm, but if there's something going on in the back of the mind of the student, then that might play a big part. So maybe having time where you could just check in with students, if that's a possible thing, and just seeing how they're doing. Because I know everybody's really busy and there's lots of students, of course, in a school. But I think that emotional support is really important. So I mentioned about strong minds before, but we, and myself, Niamh, we do that weekly. So we have check-ins with athletes, see how they're doing. So it could be something like that, maybe online, or if they have a communal or something, I don't know, but just having something there of a platform, or it could even could be like just putting a time aside within the school hours and being like, if there's something that you want to talk about, or just seeing how you're doing, that could be something. Or even having like a professional come in and talk about emotional and mental well-being, because you have your health weeks. Maybe they could come in and do a presentation, or maybe they could come in and just spend some time with the students and give emotional support, or even getting that professional to train up staff within the school so then they've got that continuous support through.
Wonderful. And you're absolutely right. We, you know, we talk an awful lot about what we're doing with our funding to improve physical education curriculum and the broader offer, but actually it's about the whole school approach to everything and embedding a well-being agenda and ensuring that our student voice is heard, but there's mechanisms in place, an opportunity for that, that it's just the norm to share our emotions in a positive way, to have that opportunity to engage in self-review, to check on our own well-being, and that includes staff too. Wonderful, thank you so much. I'm just thinking there, really, you know, there's an awful lot of work that is happening in around inclusion in PE, but there's still so much more to be done. And us as educationists, the providers, I guess, we have that duty of care. I noted down a quote that I use a lot from Physical Education and Sport, UNESCO, and it's 1978, a really old quote, but it says, every human being has a fundamental right of access to physical education and sport, which are essential for the full development of their personality. And, you know, going back to that being a really old quote, but it's absolutely right that we all have an entitlement to that inclusive opportunity for all. But also that note there that it's about the development of the person. And when we think about Ofsted inspections, etc., it's all looking at personal development of students and what are we doing to support character and the positive qualities we need for the leaders of the future. And PE, school sport physical activity, has a huge part to play in that, and we can do it so well or equally not well enough to meet the needs of everybody and to really use it as a vehicle to do some fantastic things, really. You know, if you had that opportunity earlier in school, Kira, goodness knows what you'd be doing now, considering the achievements you've made, regardless of the fact that your PE in school sport offer wasn't perhaps what it should have been for you personally. So something for us all to be thinking about as we kind of draw this podcast to a bit of a close. I mean, we're thinking about kind of that deep-rooted, stubborn inequalities in our society, I guess, sometimes as well. When you've mentioned there, Kira, about disability sports, and sometimes you've managed to change the wording on the cycle provision and what have you. And, you know, it's allowing children and young people to have a route into further careers and further opportunities for success, be it physically, academically, social, emotionally, and into career pathways as well. So we've heard from Kira the amazing opportunities and positive outcomes that her involvement in physical activity has brought about in later life. And we know, as specialists, the power of PE, school sport, and physical activity as that vehicle to a plethora of positive outcomes. But only if we get it right for those individuals. And we've all got the opportunity, especially when we have a little bit of funding behind it, to address some of those inequalities. I think it's most important that we put across the fact that we've heard from Kira today, that it's listening to our young adults, it's listening to our students and our pupils, it's finding out what works best for them, it's ensuring they have a voice of change. Whilst we want to improve that inclusive opportunity early in life, really helping to develop positive lifelong habits. So I hope you've enjoyed listening to us chatter today. Thanks again to my colleagues from Durham Schools. They were thrown in the deep end today because I basically said we would record this as a podcast and I've invited Kira along. So do forgive me if I've put anybody on the spot, but I do hope that it's been valuable. We wish you, Kira, much success. Greater success, I should add, in the future. I'm not sure where you're going to go now. What's your thoughts for the future? What's your next steps?
Thank you for having me. But yeah, my next steps is to keep going and keep going into schools and try and encourage healthy well-being and enjoy the physical sense of the balance bikes and the swimming teaching and every other role as well, because it's just so much fun that I get to do different things from day to day as well.
Wonderful. And I'm sure we will see you in the future. We like to do our PE, school sport and physical activity conferences in County Durham, Kira, so you shall be getting an invite and hopefully it will be face to face. But thanks so much again, and thanks colleagues too. We look forward to sharing more with you soon.